Hi, I'm Curtis Taylor, also known as Hophead Said.
And I'm Jason Hendrick, the hungry man from Everybody's Hungry.
And you are listening to Pints and Pairings. So Jason's trying to figure out the name of that movie. And guess what? The name of the movie has things in it. It's words with stuff. So it's kind of like my son. Remember the thing when we did that thing, but we were running around that other thing, and I'm like, you didn't give me anything to work with.
See what happens after Irish Red, last show?
It was like, and that was only a 4.2% beer.
And there you have the lead-in to Pints and Pairings, BJCP, category number 10, my unintelligible ramblings about a movie with the word things in its name.
It's going to come to you somewhere in the middle of this podcast. So
it will.
We'll figure it out.
Because I can see the movie. I can see the ending. It's whatever. We'll figure it out.
Well, we've got a treat for our taste buds. We're going into BJCP category number 10. Again, this is Pints and Pairings, and I'm Curtis, also known as Hophead Said.
And I'm Jason, the hungry man from Everybody's Hungry.
And I tell you what, we've had malty. We had malty, and then we had earthy, spicy malty, and now we're going straight for hops, palate cleansing hops, and we're going category 10 American ales, and you can't do this American ales unless you pick Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. I mean, as the classic iconic example of what an American Pale Ale should be, and I don't know if they've over the years if it's if the product has changed. I don't think it has, which is kudos to them, because everyone else in the world, well, in America anyway, it seems like their pale ales are the IPAs, and a regular IPA is now a double IPA strength, and they've held tight to this. I remember tasting this probably 5-6 years ago and not caring for it. It was too bitter for me.
Well, you know, that's kind of the American way. When you look at automobiles as well, the automobiles have started out as small, and then that name badge starts moving up, and the car is just getting bigger and bigger, and they bring in another small car. And just like this, so we got our base IPAs, and all that wasn't good enough. Let's expand the IPA. Let's make it bigger. Now we got the double IPA, but we'll bring in something else that's similar to the original IPA, and you just keep working. We always make things bigger. We make them bolder, and we make them higher in alcohol content, spicier, whatever it may be.
Well, and one of the reasons why I mentioned that 5-6 years ago, I didn't care for this beer so much is because it seemed to be too bitter. I wanted some more malt. Where I like on an IPA or a double IPA, there's a lot of hops and a lot of bitterness, but there's also a lot of malt flavor, sweetness to balance it. And so one of the things now is this doesn't seem bitter to me. It doesn't seem, and so I'm guessing that it hasn't changed, that they've kept the same recipe for the last 25 years.
You're not opposed to the bitter at this point. I mean, you are Hophead Said. You know, growing up in Indiana, my experience and exposure to IPAs, and for that matter, any kind of beer with an assertive hop component, especially in the aroma, was virtually non-existent for a very long time. And now that's the norm. A lot of craft breweries are playing with hops, with the variety of hops and the volume of hops used. And I think you would agree that at this point, there's really kind of three focuses that you can leverage hops. The style of hop or the variety, the amount of hops you use, and at what point of the boil. And each one of those is going to really add a variation to the beer. And you can have the same recipe, and just tweaking the hop aspect, it's going to give you something totally different and unique characteristics. And that's probably what we're seeing with Sierra versus some of the newer, like you said, the double IPAs and that. Maybe they took a base recipe and they're like, well, we can refine this, or we can really change its profile for people's hop focus just by tweaking the variation of the varietal.
Hmm. Well, yeah, and you made some good points with the different hops. Another point I would make with the hops too is that hops are, you know, specific brands or versions, varieties are grown for a specific reason. And so there's some of them that have high bitterness and some of them that have low bitterness, some that have high aroma qualities, some that have low aroma qualities. But another way that hops are being used creatively is you take a high bitterness and then you use it as aroma, or you use a low bitterness and you use it as aroma, or you or you switch them around. So you're using them in non-traditional places throughout the boil too, just to see what kind of flavors you get out of it. And I want to make sure I make it really clear that there is a difference between hop bitterness and hop flavor. And hop flavor is a wonderful thing. And so sometimes we talk about hop flavor. I think a lot of people may use the terms synonymously.
Yeah,
hop bitterness,
it's like
hop
tissue
flavor.
And Kleenex, right. I think. But it's
but they're totally different things. And you know, bitterness is kind of your reaction to it, and the flavor is what it tastes like.
Yeah, a lot of times, for me, a traditional IPA that's not playing too heavily with Citra or Amarillo, or it's going to have that kind of piney, sappy flavor. Mm-hmm. And the bitterness, like you said, is the initial reaction, but also the mouthfeel, kind of like a tannic red wine. But there are some flavors you can get out of it, and it can either be a citrus aspect, it can be a piney or a sappy kind of component, or even a kind of a woodsy, cedary. You know, each mm-hmm. There's a lot of varieties out there, and I think one of the beers you were mentioning in a previous show at one point had 11 different hops used in their recipe, and each one of those is going to give something a little bit different.
Right. And so you end up getting, especially if a brewer's a talented brewer is using that many, you know that they're using them for a reason. Home brewers, sometimes they'll throw in 11 different hops just because, hey, this is my recipe, and I think it's going to be really great if I put every hop in it. Wouldn't it be awesome? And then you go, no, it's just you can't taste any of them, and it doesn't.
They come muddled.
Right. So, you know, some hops, and there's a favorite hop of mine that I use in my IPAs and my pale ales is a Magnum, and it has kind of a salty flavor to it, and it has a really great bitterness, and so that's always my base hop that I use, and then I'll play with the hops on the other side where I'm getting flavor components or aroma components, because that hop doesn't have necessarily a pleasant aroma,
sure,
but it gives a really great minerally kind of bitterness to it that I love to use as a base layer, and I've learned how to use it that way. And so every one of these hops can be used in different ways, and they give out different characteristics. So
and we're seeing some of that in the Sierra Nevada Pale Ale right now. It's kind of light in color, kind of an orangey yellowish hue, but also on the palate. Well, let me back up, because I always start with the nose. You always got to start with the aroma. It's got a nice hoppy kind of floral aspect. I think it's like a fresh flower field, and mm-hmm. and not in, there's a little bit of a like a apricot or a stone fruit sweetness underlying there, but you get a lot of floral, a lot of flower note, mm-hmm. And not in a lavender or soapy kind of way. So I want to be cautious when I say flower notes, but it is definitely kind of a fresh cut bouquet.
Right. And on the, you know, and even when you say fresh cut, it just, you know, you could easily pull out. It's not a stretch to say it's fresh cut grass, depending on how, you know, which brand you're using as your sample. But there's a lot of hops that are being used in it, and hops are a green vegetable matter.
Yeah.
And so it's not, you know, you can get grassy aromas, you can get grassy flavors, and I think, you know, there's a nice hop bitterness in this. It also has a grassy flavor to me.
Yeah, and I'm glad you let that road open for me, because I'm getting some of that herbaceous. There's like a little bit of a layer of honey kind of sweetness that is slightly overshadowed in a way that works well by the herbaceous kind of floral and grass kind of notes. So you're getting just almost like a nice cup of tea. Mm-hmm. So you have that sweetness of the honey, but it's not sweet and sugary. It's just a little bit to cut through the herbaceousness of the tea, and it works well in this glass of beer.
Yeah, and you know, I'm just trying to think of food pairings, but I go back to what I said on the English Pale Ale show as well, is that pale ales, whether they're the English version or they're the American version, are the workhorses of food pairings. You can't go wrong with a pale ale. I mean, there isn't anything that, especially with this one, other than maybe a bitter chocolate, maybe. But yeah. Otherwise...
Yeah, that'd be a tough one, though.
But going through anything, cheeses, fried foods, grilled foods, roasted foods, soups, you name it. This beer is going to help. Pale ales are going to go well just because they taste good. They're light, they have a nice carbonation, and they cleanse your palate really well. They refresh your palate.
Most definitely. And I like your fried food, right? I mean, it jumped out at me immediately. A good oyster po' boy with this beer would be amazing because you got, again, that rich fried component. Everybody loves fried food. There's no denying that the grease and the fat used in deep fat frying adds a velvety richness and a flavor that's hard to describe. It eludes me at this point. But also, when you take those oysters after they've been either a nice cornmeal or a good light beer breading and deep fried, and you bite into the oyster, it's going to have a salty creaminess that is really going to stand up and take notice with this beer.
I like how I'm talking about fried foods, and then you go to maybe the most exotic fried food. You know what? What if we fry oysters and put it in a po' boy sandwich? Yeah, all right. Sounds good to me. No, perfect. A great example and a suggestion for people to try. Definitely. There, you know, we could talk, go on and on and on with these ones. One of the things that I would consider pairing with this, though, there are some cheeses that where they're made early in the spring, and so they have a grassy flavor because the cows were eating this succulent green grass.
We talked about that before. The quality of the food and the feed that cows or any animals mm-hmm. getting where you're using their milk as your cheese base is crucial because it's going to impart a certain level of flavor into the actual milk and cheese. So fresh grass and hay out in a field on their own is going to provide something totally different than a grain and corn-fed animal. There's going to be a more distinctive sweetness in that cheese and milk with the corn-fed and the grain-fed, and a lighter, more herbaceous and refreshing aspect with the grass-fed.
Right. And so some of these, looking at different pale ales, now I consider a Sierra Nevada pale ale a fairly aggressive pale ale for, you know, an American pale ale standards. The Stone Pale Ale, now on the other hand, something that comes from an iconic brewery known for pushing the envelopes, that one is a very nutty, toasty sort of pale ale. It doesn't have near the bitterness, if for my palate anyway, between these. If I were to put those side by side, I would be able to tell which one was Stone because it's the more mild of the two. Sure. Between Sierra Nevada. So you want to look at, when you're looking at pairings, you taste the beers and find the pale ale you like, certainly. So a green grassy sort of cheese is going to go well with the Sierra Nevada pale ale, but it's not necessarily going to go well with the Stone pale ale because it's a much more subdued, it's more of a nutty flavor. So look for nuttier cheeses, but just kind of pay attention to whatever the flavors are that you notice as you're drinking the beer, and then work your way and then find the foods that have the same flavors in it.
And I'm looking up a recipe or a menu item right now because I was at 2088 recently down here in Camarillo, and I had these beautiful scallops that Chef Candace and her team put together. They're lemon scented sea scallops, but the item on the dish, I don't think the scallops would fare as well against this pale. I think they'd be crushed a little bit. The delicate sweetness of the scallop, I think, would be overpowered. But she had this champagne risotto as the base for the scallops with a little bit of, I think it was Parmesan or like a Reggiano cheese that added a creaminess and a salty richness and a great mouthfeel that would go really awesome with this pale ale. Mm-hmm. I was like sitting there, I'm like, what was that? It was a risotto, but what was the cheese? And unfortunately on their menu, on their website, it doesn't list what cheese was included, but it is their champagne risotto. And I know for a fact that it would match awesomely with this beer.
Right. And even with the Parmesan, looking at using the Stone pale ale, something that's a little nuttier, something that's a little toastier too, would go well with that as well. It would be a different play together. They would go well, they would pair well together for different reasons. But, you know, whether you like a more assertive bitterness or you want something that's a little more dialed back, you know, it's easy enough to find your pairings with that.
You know, I think one real basic and obvious pairing is a pepperoni pizza. Just going real simplistic, a good pale ale. And the reason being is that spiciness and that kind of assertive, salty, peppery component of the pepperoni is going to really resonate well with some of these more subtle pepper notes and spice that's in this beer. And it's going to make it stand up. It's going to give you a little more alcohol bite for sure. So be cautious of that. I mean, be aware that it's going to accentuate some of that heat, but it's also going to accentuate the spice and the pepper in the beer. And they're going to, it's going to give you a really cool pairing.
And you kind of lead into another good component about these pairings too. So the, if you've got something that's spicy, the hop components or the hop, what do I say, profile of these beers plays a big part in that too. So what you were talking about with the pepperoni, if something's assertively hopped, it's going to amplify that spice just a little bit.
And amplify is a great term to use.
And then on it, then going to my other example, the Stone Pale Ale, which is a much milder beer for me, that one isn't going to accentuate as much. So if you've got something that's a dish that's really, really spicy and you want to bring it back a little bit, think about that. You know, you want something a little more, just like you would do if, you know, putting on a flour tortilla or using corn chips or sour cream or cheese to bring back heat, whatever it is that you're bringing back the heat, or if you want to accentuate it, adding more jalapenos, more peppers, whatever it is, the beer works the same way. So a maltier beer is going to bring the heat back and a hoppier beer is going to amplify that just a little bit.
I think one dish that I initially thought of at the very beginning of the segment that I was reluctant to put out there, but the longer the beer sits, it warms up a little bit and more we're discussing it, I think it would still work. And that's a rich and gamey kind of tea duck, you know, a tea smoked duck, often served ducks, especially in Asian restaurants, is typically served with a sweet hoisin sauce. So the tea smoke is going to bring out that floral and herbaceous component of this beer. And then that sweet hoisin sauce is going to contrast a little bit with some of the peppery spice notes. I think that would be a cool pairing to try.
I like that. And going out on the exotic kind of level of doing a pale ale. You know, you put together a pairing dinner and you say, I'm going to, Sierra Nevada is going to be one of the pairings. That's probably going to be a ho-hum kind of thing. Oh, okay. But then you add it and say, hey, this is what we're using. And you know, all of a sudden everyone kind of perks up because who's thinking of a tea duck hoisin sauce?
And that's the beauty of these pairings and, you know, why we're always looking for feedback too, because somebody's going to think of a combination out there that we're not expecting, that it may, like you said, be a ho-hum or a typical beer that we've had in the past. And like, yeah, it's a good beer, but I don't know if I would use that in a fancy tasting dinner. But when you start putting other ingredients with it to either resonate with some of these notes we're talking about or contrast with them in a pleasing way, now you've got an exciting event, and the creativity and the expertise of the culinary minds behind a pairing dinner usually will look for the same kind of characteristics that we're talking about. You know, how do the ingredients play off each other? Are they going to resonate? Are they going to contrast? Are they going to complement?
Right. Well, we've focused solely on American Pale Ale. And in the category 10 of American Ale, there is the American Pale Ale, there's American Amber Ale, and there's the American Brown Ale. Now, it's quiz time for you, Jason. Which one do you think is more assertive? The traditional brown, English brown, or
the American brown ale?
So which one do you think is more assertive hops?
I'm going to go with the American
brown ale. Very yeah. good. And I'm looking at a list of some of these here. So one of Moose Drool.
Moose Drool is intense.
That one you're going to find anywhere. And get it and drink that one out of the can, please, people. That one is...
It's vulnerable in the bottle.
It is. It's worth buying it in the can. One of the ones that are, some of these that are coming out, kind of a maybe a subcategory of the subcategory of the American
Brown. We're
getting
into the like subway levels, the basement.
In your outline, this is like the small eye down here with the whatever.
This is the Al Capone's vault of categories.
And you will find nothing in there except old beer bottles. But India Brown Ales and some other things like that where it's a brown ale when it's just hopped way crazy. Sure. You know. And those are really good too. I really enjoy the chocolate flavors and the hops. But so as Jason and I were getting ready to do this one, I looked at it and was kind of looking through, and we've got to do American Brown Ale too, because there's just too many good brown ales that are different than, you know, Newcastle.
Sure. Well, I mean, even when we looked at the Scottish and Irish category and we decided to break that up for obvious reasons, what we saw is that Belhaven Scottish Ale was totally different than the O'Hara Irish Red in a like full spectrum variation from mm-hmm. each other. So I can imagine that the subcategories are created in order to identify and recognize the distinctive separation of these different beers.
Right. So we'll end up doing another one down the road here, whether it's the next one.
And there's the reminder.
Whether but, it's whether it's the next episode or it's down the road, we will get back. We'll come back to American Brown Ales for sure, just because we need to do justice to some of these. Like Moose Drill is an iconic version of it. And then maybe even, you know, there's some local brown ales too around here that I think deserve some attention as well.
And one of these days when you ask me which one is more assertive, traditional or American, and I answer it correctly, I'm going to look for confetti and balloons to come down like I won a prize.
I'm sorry, but you should know that when I answer that question.
can we green screen behind me and actually add that in later to the video?
We might be able to do that with the green screen. Yay! Look, confetti. Well, wow.
It's
we
been
shot
another episode of Pints and Pairings.
It has been, and we'll be... You know, give us some feedback. Go to hopheadshead.com // whatever they call it now these days. Pints and Pairings. Click the Pints and Pairings link. Leave a message. A comment under each one of the episodes. Each episode has its own post. Sure. And so you can make comments underneath each one of those. You know, let us know if you liked the suggestion. If you have a suggestion, if you wanted to try something different, or if you think we're just totally insane in the membrane, and we'll go with it.
And although Curtis is a Cicerone, we are definitely not touting ourselves as ultimate experts. We just love food and beer, the same as you. So send us some feedback. Send us your pairings and some of the beers that you like in these categories.
Right. You can reach Jason@everybodyshungry.org.
And Curtis at hopheadshead.com. A wealth of knowledge. You want to learn about beer. You want to see some cool pairings. Or do you want to get in the Hophead Said Huddle, Hophead Huddle for this coming football season? Check out hopheadshead.com. You're going to learn a lot.
All kinds of beer pairings and brewery information for all of the NFL brewery, hometown brewery kind of things.
And if you're outside of California tuning in, get on board and get your city logged in with Curtis. Send in your recommendations for breweries in your city for the tie-in to the NFL.
I am looking for other breweries, definitely. It's the insiders. Because, one, I don't have the money to go to every single one of those cities. And, two, and maybe more importantly, I don't have the liver capacity or function to be able to go and
I don't think that component is always taken into account in these beer shows or beer ventures.
Well, we pour ourselves small samples, so we're okay.
But we appreciate your support. Yeah. So keep tuning into Pints and Pairings. And as always,
we want to remind you to eat, drink, and be hoppy.
We'll see you at the next pour.
Cheers.
Cheers. I'm Jason Hendrick, Hunger Man from Everybody's Hungry.
And I'm Curtis Taylor from hopheadshead.com.
You've been listening to Pints and Pairings.
And we'll catch you on the next pour.